Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March 3rd, 2025. Beginning with some articles from the front page. Decatur City Council to consider licensing massage parlors. Decatur. The Decatur City Council on Monday will consider requiring massage parlors to be licensed by the city and banning so-called sweepstakes machines that operate outside of the state's video gaming regulatory structure. The twin moves, in their own way, would each represent the city flexing its oversight muscle onto industries that have often operated in gray areas. In the case of massage parlors, city-level licensing would open establishments up to inspections by the police and fire departments, as well as city building instructions. The idea is to crack down on businesses advertising themselves as massage parlors, but are actually houses of prostitution or offering other illicit sexual services. Such businesses operating in the shadows often employ victims of human trafficking and advertise their services on the dark web. While there is no indication that any Decatur massage parlors are operating in this illicit manner, it has been a problem in neighboring Springfield. Last year, Gregory Fraz of Springfield was indicted on federal charges, alleging that he conspired to operate prostitution sites at a half a dozen massage parlors in the capital city. Fraz has pleaded not guilty. Springfield police subsequently raided two more parlors not associated with Fraz over allegations of prostitution. The Springfield City Council subsequently approved a stringent city-level licensing requirement. Last month, the city announced that 11 parlors were shut down for failing to comply with the ordinance. Under Decatur's proposed ordinance, relevant city departments will conduct inspections of the establishments and make recommendations to City Manager Tim Gleason, who will have the ultimate authority on whether to grant or deny a license. Licenses would be up for renewal March 31st of every year. In addition to basic sanitation standards, the ordinance will explicitly require that the genital area of both patrons and employees be covered while on site. It also makes clear it is unlawful for an employee to place his or her hand upon, to touch any part of his or her body, to fondle in any manner, or to massage a sexual or genital area of any person while on the licensed premises. The ordinance would limit hours of operation to between 8 a.m. and 9 p.m. Those in violation of the ordinance may be subject to a fine of between $250 and $500 per offense. It specifically exempts medical facilities, athletic programs, licensed cosmetologists, educational institutions, and state-licensed home-based massage service providers. The council will also consider banning so-called sweepstakes machines. The machines look and operate like regular gaming terminals found in bars, restaurants, and gas stations, but they are largely unregulated and untaxed due to a loophole in state law. While customers can put in money and win cash prizes, there are also options for free plays and to win non-cash prizes, such as coupons. The machines have long been viewed as illegal gambling by the Illinois Gaming Board, and the machines have been associated with organized crime. But that has not stopped their proliferation, especially in areas of the state where video gaming has been limited, such as Chicago. According to city staff, the ordinance is being considered because they have received information that local businesses are being approached by sweepstakes vendors. It is unknown how many sweepstakes machines are in operation in Decatur, but Soy City has 500 video gaming terminals in operation across 85 different businesses, putting it among the top cities in the state for the activity. Several attempts have been made in the state legislature to ban sweepstakes machines, and bills that would have even passed the Illinois Senate. But to this point, nothing has ever passed both houses or hit Governor Pritzker's desk. Legislation has once again been introduced in Springfield to ban the devices. This article was written by Brendan Moore. Continuing with front page news, cause of massive structure fire north of Maroa under investigation by Brendan Moore. Maroa. The cause of a massive fire that engulfed a vacant building north of Maroa Saturday afternoon remains under investigation, but the extinguished flames no longer present an active threat, police and fire officials said. This was an isolated incident, and we do not believe that there's any danger to the public, said Maroa Police Chief Robert Fitzgerald. The Maroa Fire Department received a call shortly after 3 p.m. on Saturday about a building on fire on Wood Street, just south of Lake Fork Road, near Four Winds RV. Once on the scene, firefighters observed a fully involved structure fire and requested a third alarm. Two surrounding buildings also sustained fire damage, said Maroa Police Chief Jamie Zombro. There were no injuries, and the scene was cleared by 9:15 p.m. More than 10 surrounding fire departments assisted in the response. Fitzgerald said the origin of the fire remains an active investigation with the department and the Office of the Illinois State Fire Marshal. The Maroa Police Department, on behalf of the property owner, is requesting that people stay away from the property besides routine traffic on Wood Street. According to property records, two parcels containing the warehouse and adjoining buildings were purchased for $52,053 and $102,947 in September 2024. The property owner of both is listed as Weddell Holdings, a limited liability company. Continuing with some local news. Forgotten Black Military Heroes, featured in Illinois State Museum exhibit by Anthony Janos of Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. As Black History Month came to an end last week, the Illinois State Museum honored Black Springfield residents who excelled in their military service to the country, from forgotten heroes of the Civil War to soldiers deployed in France during World War I, who earned the nickname Black Devils from the Germans. The event was one in a series dedicated to the Black community of Springfield, organized in a partnership with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the Illinois State Museum, Springfield's local public Lincoln Library, the Illinois State Military Museum, and Fever River Research. It capped a variety of tributes during Black History Month, and historical talks, hikes, films, and tours put on by Springfield State Historic Sites to showcase the lives and accomplishments of Springfield's Black residents. The main takeaway we want people to walk away with is that Black excellence in terms of military service has been tied before and after the Civil War to the struggle for freedom and citizenship, said Sheila Ryan, a researcher who works at the IDNR and helped organize an event Wednesday in their honor. Springfield has a deep history in the civil rights movement. The city's brutal 1908 race riots were a principal catalyst for the establishment of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, or NAACP. The Springfield race riots were spurred by an angry mob looking to lynch a pair of black men in the Sangamon County Jail, who were being held on unrelated charges of murder and rape, although the alleged rape victim, a white woman, would later recant her story. Officials nervous about the mob orchestrated a false fire to distract the crowd to move the men from the jail, which further angered the mob, leading to an all-out riot that ultimately lynched two other black men and killed more than a dozen others involved. The mob burned down much of Springfield's poorer black neighborhood and destroyed dozens of black-owned businesses in the city's wealthier, mostly black neighborhood. In 2019, archaeological mitigation efforts for the Springfield Rail Improvements Project found that some of those homes in the neighborhood that burned down during the riots, then known as the Badlands, belonged to some of the black military men who excelled and were celebrated during this month's exhibit at the Illinois State Museum. These included Silas Sappington, who was a member of the 55th Massachusetts Infantry Regiment, an all-black regiment with white officers that served during the Civil War, according to Adam Krall, who helped organize the event and is a historic site interpreter with the IDNR. The exhibit also features Otis Duncan, who helped put down the 1908 race riots and in the process had his family home attacked and ransacked, destroying a portrait of his mother. Duncan, at the time, served in the 8th Infantry Regiment of the Illinois National Guard, which later became the 370th Infantry Regiment, an all-black regiment. As its colonel, Duncan went on to lead the regiment, which served alongside the French during the First World War. The French called them partridges, which is a mark of honor and distinction because these men go into battle proudly and very bravely, Krall said. The Germans gave them a nickname, the Black Devils, because they feared these men. When they attacked, they didn't stop. As a result of their actions in the war, soldiers of the 370th Infantry Regiment received 21 Distinguished Service Crosses from the United States and 68 Croix de Guerre from France, an honor awarded to soldiers for bravery in combat. Despite their military accomplishments, the black soldiers returned home to a society that did not treat them as equals. Krall noted that Springfield's Oak Ridge Cemetery, which features President Abraham Lincoln's tomb, also has 28 black Civil War soldiers buried there. Their service and their graves have essentially been forgotten, or it was not convenient to talk about it, Krall said. To bring this to the fore is something really important for us as historical interpreters. Among the attendees at the event, Eric Sanchez, a veteran deployed in Iraq and a resident of Quincy, said he drove 2 hours each way to see the exhibit and learn more about soldiers who have made the same sacrifice as he has. When you are a soldier, you want to come home to a grateful population, Sanchez said. I love history, and I wanted to see what it was like to be a black soldier in the 1900s, when many black people were still treated as criminals in society. Continuing with more state news, Illinois man accused of deadly mass shooting at July 4th parade faces trial 3 years after the attack, by Sophia Tureen, Associated Press. Waukegan, Illinois. The trial of a suburban Chicago man accused of a mass shooting at a 2022 Independence Day parade that killed 7 people and wounded dozens more is set to begin Monday. Robert Cremo III faces 21 counts of first-degree murder, 3 counts for each person killed, as well as 48 counts of attempted murder. Prosecutors dropped the less serious 48 counts of aggravated battery before jury selection last week. The road to the trial has been bumpy, with delays partly due to Cremo's unpredictability, including his rejection of a plea deal that even surprised his attorneys. As potential jurors were questioned last week, he sporadically appeared at court, at times refusing to leave his jail cell. Authorities allege Cremo perched on a roof and fired into crowds assembled for the annual 4th of July parade in downtown Highland Park, 30 miles north of Chicago. Prosecutors have submitted thousands of pages of evidence, as well as hours of a videotaped interrogation, during which police say Cremo confessed to the shooting. But the 24-year-old has since pleaded not guilty. His defense attorneys have declined comment ahead of the trial, which is expected to last about a month. His father, Robert Cremo Jr., a one-time mayoral candidate, was charged in connection with how his son obtained a gun license. He pleaded guilty in 2023 to 7 misdemeanor counts of reckless conduct and served less than 2 months in jail. He has attended his son's hearings, sometimes making eye contact with him during court. He has declined to discuss the case in detail ahead of the trial. "As a parent, I love my son very much," he said, "and Bobby loves this country more than anyone would ever know." Prosecutors plan to call multiple law enforcement officers and survivors of the shooting to testify. They will also show videos of Cremo's statements to police. Some of the videos have already been shown in court, as prosecutors tried unsuccessfully to have them thrown out. Cremo's erratic behavior has contributed to court delays. He fired his public defenders and said he would represent himself, then abruptly reversed himself. In June of 2024, when he was expected to accept a plea deal and give victims and relatives a chance to address him publicly, he arrived at the court in a wheelchair and rejected the deal. Residents in the wealthy Highland Park community of roughly 30,000 set along Lake Michigan have mourned the losses deeply. Some potential jurors were excused because of their connections to the case. City leaders canceled the usual parade in 2023, opting for a community walk. The parade was reinstated last year on a different route and with a memorial for the victims. "Our community is once again reminded of the immense pain and trauma caused by the Highland Park shooting," Highland Park Mayor Nancy Rotering said in a statement ahead of jury selection. "Our hearts remain with the victims, their families, and all those whose lives were forever changed by that devastating day." Survivors and their families have filed multiple lawsuits, including against the maker of the semi-automatic rifle used in the shooting, and against authorities they accuse of negligence. Entertainment news: strip club Cinderella story Anora wins Best Picture at 97th Academy Awards, by Jake Coyle, AP film writer. Los Angeles. Anora, a strip club Cinderella story without the fairy tale ending, was crowned Best Picture at the 97th Academy Awards on Sunday night, handing Sean Baker's gritty, Brooklyn-set screwball farce Hollywood's top prize. In a stubbornly fluctuating Oscar season, Anora, the Palme d'Or winner at Cannes Film Festival, emerged as the unlikely frontrunner. Baker's tale of an erotic dancer who elopes with the son of a Russian oligarch, unusually explicit for a Best Picture winner, was made for $6 million. But Oscar viewers, eschewing blockbuster contenders like Wicked and Dune Part 2, instead added Anora to a string of recent indie Best Picture winners, including Everything Everywhere All at Once, Coda, and Nomadland. For a film industry that's been transformed by streaming and humbled by economic turmoil, Baker and Anora epitomized a sort of cinematic purity. On the campaign trail, Baker called for the return to the 90-day exclusive theatrical release. "Where did we fall in love with the movies? At the movie theater," Baker said Sunday night. "Filmmakers keep making films for the big screen." In personally winning 4 Oscars on Sunday, Baker tied the mark held by Walt Disney, who won for 4 different films in 1954. That Baker and Disney share the record is ironic. Baker's The Florida Project took place in a Florida low-budget motel in the shadow of Disneyland. 22 years after winning Best Actor for The Pianist, Adrian Brody won the same Oscar again for his performance as another Holocaust survivor in Brady Corbett's The Brutalist. Brody's win came over Timothée Chalamet, a complete unknown, who had the chance of becoming the youngest best actor ever, a record owned by Brody, just short of 30 when he won for The Pianist. Mikey Madison won Best Actress for her breakthrough performance in Anora, a victory that came over the category favorite Demi Moore of The Substance. Sean Baker, the filmmaker of Anora, won Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Editing. He used his acceptance speech for director to preach passionately for the theatrical experience. The Oscars otherwise spread the love around, dishing out awards to Anora, Conclave, Wicked, and The Substance. 8 of the 10 movies nominated for Best Picture came away with at least one award at the Dolby Theater on Sunday. That included the beleaguered Netflix contender Amelia Perez, which, despite a backlash to old offensive tweets by star Carla Sofia Gascon, won Best Supporting Actress for Zoe Saldana. "I am a proud child of immigrant parents with dreams and dignity and hard-working hands," said Saldana. "I am the first American of Dominican origin to accept an Academy Award, and I know I will not be the last." The night's first award, presented by Robert Downey Jr., went to Kieran Culkin for Best Supporting Actor. Culkin has cruised through the season, picking up award after award for his performance alongside Jesse Eisenberg in A Real Pain. The biggest upset early on in the Best Animated Feature category, Flo, the wordless Latvian film, upset DreamWorks Animation's The Wild Robot. The win for Flo, an ecological parable about a cat in a flooded world, was the first Oscar ever for a Latvian film. "Thank you to my cats and dogs," director Jints Zilbatas said, accepting the award. Wicked stars Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo kicked off the ceremony with a tribute to Los Angeles following the wildfires that devastated the Southern California metropolis earlier this year. Grande sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and Erivo performed Diana Ross's Home, before the Wicked stars joined together for Defying Gravity from their blockbuster big screen musical. Later, Wicked, the biggest box office hit among the Best Picture nominees, won awards for production design and costume design. "I'm the first black man to receive the costume design award," said costume designer Paul Tazwell, who couldn't finish that sentence because the crowd began to rise in a standing ovation. "I'm so proud of this." Best makeup and hairstyling went to The Substance for its gory creations of beauty and body horror. Dune, Part 2, won for both visual effects and sound. And its sandworm, arguably the star of the night, figured into multiple gags throughout the evening. Brady Corbett's sprawling post-war epic The Brutalist won for its cinematography by Lal Crawley and its score by Daniel Bloomberg. Though the Oscars featured the first time an actor was nominated for portraying a sitting U.S. president, Sebastian Stan, as a young Donald Trump in The Apprentice, politics went largely unmentioned in the first half of the ceremony. Host Conan O'Brien avoided the topic completely in his opening monologue. The first exception was nearly 2 hours in, when presenter Daryl Hannah announced simply, "Slava Ukraini," glory to Ukraine. No Other Land, a documentary about Israeli occupation of the West Bank, made by a coalition of Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers, won Best Documentary. After failing to find a U.S. distributor, the filmmakers opted to self-distribute No Other Land. It grossed more than any other documentary nominee. There is a different path, a political solution without ethnic supremacy, with national rights for both our people, said Yuval Abraham, an Israeli, speaking beside co-director Bazel Adra, a Palestinian. "And I have to say, as I am here, the foreign policy in this country is helping to block this path. Why? Can't you see that we are intertwined, that my people can't be truly safe if Bazel's people aren't truly free?" Walter Salles' I'm Still Here, A Portrait of Resistance Under the Brazilian Military Dictatorship, won Best International Film. At one point, that award seemed a lock for Emilia Perez, the lead nominee with 13 nods, and backed by a robust campaign for Netflix. But while Emilia Perez collapsed, I'm Still Here rode a wave of passionate support in Brazil and political timeliness elsewhere. O'Brien, introduced as four-time Oscar viewer, opened the ceremony with genial ribbing of the nominees and the former talk show host's trademark self-deprecation. "A complete unknown, a real pain, Nosferatu, these are just some of the names I was called on the red carpet," said O'Brien. O'Brien, hosting for the first time, avoided any political commentary on his opening remarks, but the monologue was a smash hit. O'Brien leant on the disappointed face of John Lithgow, a full-throated Chalamet from Adam Sandler, and a gag of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos being delivered to the red carpet in a cardboard box. O'Brien's most sincere comments were reserved for Los Angeles itself. In speaking about the enduring magic and grandeur of film in the wake of wildfires, O'Brien, whose house in the Pacific Palisades was spared by the fires, then segued into a musical routine, singing, "I Won't Waste Time." This year's Oscars, among the most unpredictable in years, unspooled after a turbulent year for the film industry. Ticket sales were down from 3% from the previous year, and more significantly from pre-pandemic times. The fires in January only added to the pain. The ceremony took place days after the death of Gene Hackman, the 95-year-old two-time Oscar winner, and his wife, Betsy Arakawa, were found dead Wednesday in their New Mexico home. Morgan Freeman, his co-star in Unforgiven and Under Suspicion, honored him. "This week, our community lost a giant," said Freeman, "and I lost a dear friend." Last year's telecast, propelled by the twin blockbusters of Oppenheimer and Barbie, led the Oscars to a four-year viewership high, with 19.5 million viewers. This year was smaller independent films favored in the most prominent awards. The Academy will be tested to draw as large of an audience. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, March the 3rd, 2025. Please stay tuned.